It's interesting because your story, you should have gone to the Olympics. You were, I mean, in every sense of the word, you were poised to go to the Olympics. And it's what's interesting is everybody in their life has all kinds of things. Andy Mill, who came to our graduation and spoke, that he was up there on the slope doing his training run, blew out his knee, his life was changed. He was up there. He had a good shot of even placing, and this was like his whole life just changed. And he spoke to us about that and what that meant to him and what he had to go through and talked about grit and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting because when I came to Portland, I'd sold my sculptures when I was a little kid, probably 13, in gallery in Aspen. And so I kind of was one of the natural things that came to me, and I kind of felt like, well, I can't do that as a career. Got to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you know. But it kept coming back and kept gnawing at me. My mom like sent me to the Aspen Film Fest to see some of the animation stuff, and I started to think about it. So Tom Alpern told me I should come to Portland because there's a clay animation studio out here, and I came out here and I started wanting to get a job, wanting to work for them. And so there was a job opening for mixing clay. Now, since I had sculpted, I kind of knew I could, mixing clay was kind of like a step down, but I felt like it was a great way to get in, you know? So I go to intern for that. I do a big sculpture to try to intern for the job, for the clay mixing position. And I go in and there's three women and one guy. And I go in for the interview and the guy's running around and he takes me aside and he says, "Why do you want to mix clay? You know what? You know, you're want to get a sculptor. You want to be an animator. Why?" And I said, "You know, mail room, I don't care. I'll work my way up. I'll work here for a while, learn this system, meet people, learn things along the way, and then you can throw me into animation or whatever, you know. I'm not afraid of that, you know." And he's like, "Then you got my vote." Walks off, right? So now I go face the three women. And the three women, and I heard this because my wife wasn't, I was dating her at the time, but she had heard from some friends that they were talking about that this clay mixing job, that all they're getting are guys to work there and that they want to have some women in there, you know? And so I came in for the interview. They said, "Thank you, very nice, but we don't necessarily need you." Now I knew the girl that they were going for. You know, she hadn't done any clay, she hadn't done any sculpting, all she did was paper cutout stuff, which was totally different than anything clay. And I tried to find out why, and they just wouldn't tell me why. And I knew that it was because they wanted a woman in there. So I've got dissed. I understand, but I also felt like at the time, I felt like it was one of those in your face, like, how could you do the same thing that you're fighting against? How could you do that to someone, you know? And it sort of felt like that was a little bit, in a way, sort of your story. I mean, the truth is, you went on and did a whole bunch of stuff, and you won all kinds of things. And so, in the skiing realm of stuff, you did great. But the Olympics is one of those things when you're in high school and you're going up that run, you're always thinking about that. You're always wanting to do that, you know? Do you how did you get through that? You know what I mean? Because you are a very positive person.
That was a huge blow. That because I yeah, it was everything. I mean, for me that was a lifelong goal, and I'd made the 82 World Championship team, and I was poised to blew my knee out then at actually in at that game, but I came back strong, and then was having really good results in 84. Leading up to the Olympics, and as well as my peers on the World Cup, and it was a low snow year. It was pretty difficult because and I wasn't in the first seed, so you had to scrap to get in there. Anyway, the results, the criteria was you had to have X place to make it. Anyway, it was we were very very close, and I felt we performed well enough. To be chosen for the team. And we were actually in Bulgaria, was the last World Cup prior to going to Sarajevo for those Olympics, and had a good result there. And I fully expected, that night we went to actually went to Ambassador dinner in Sofia, Bulgaria. It was really cool, and I just expected that night that the coaches, we'd have a meeting or and say, okay, this is what we and Bill Merold at the time, just this is what the men's team would be. And it was wild. We went to bed and woke up next morning where we were in our hotel, and it was like gone. All those guys, coaches, the mayors, all the guys that made the team,
yeah,
and they were gone. And the rest of us, Hans Stontiner, John Buxman, and I were just like, I mean, it was such a crushing blow in so many ways. First of all, and the integrity of a coach to do that, right? Whether you make the team or not, I don't care what time of night it is. I'm going to sit down with you and say, hey, man, I'm sorry. I went to bat for you. Here is what the decision was, right? And why they came with that. But to be left like a dog. And so I lost all respect of that. I mean, I came back, I was reeling. We were all reeling pretty heavily, but I came back and I was podium in the Nationals a couple weeks after, kind of pulled myself back together. And then I had my best World Cup. I was top 10 in Vail, right after that. And I had opportunity then, a platform to speak to Denver Post and all that about, it was pretty heavy. I mean, especially the Aspen crew, it was a bummer to have two spots left open. Like, they didn't fill those.
I remember walking up the slope and watching you. I mean, I remember rooting and watching you go through. Yeah. I would hike up to the last major turn right before the long straightaway. And I remember watching and rooting for you guys, you know. And I felt like you're always rooting for your hometown heroes, you know.
But it was hard. It was hard. It was hard for me. So, and a couple of my colleagues, it's still... I think deep down, it's so sore. They weren't able. I approached it. I approached. It was Bill Merold that at that time made that call, and it took me about 10 years. But you know, I said, "Hey, I got to get this off. We got to talk this out." And a couple different times, and he didn't fully cop to it, but I think I think he would have made a different decision today, right?
Right.
Because I would have probably stuck around. You look at anyone. The first Olympics is generally you're getting experience, and the next one is when you're going to really score, right? And that was certainly, you know, in history. Well, I said, screw it. I went one more U and I turned pro halfway through that year and never looked back. And the ski team really had a void then because they lost a lot of us. I was 24 years old. I was in my prime and to fill that hole. So I think it was tough, but Do you think
that it fueled your pro circuit? Because it seemed like that's when you jumped into the pro thing, and did it sort of fuel that? I mean,
yeah, I think I here's what it did for me. I'm 24 years old. I go the next year 25 on the World Cup, and I was number one ranked slalom skier in the U.S. at that time, and was having an adequate year. Went to the World Championships, and I just said, you know, I'm 25. I'd had enough of it, right? And I just said, and plus, you know what? I'm 25. I need to make a living now. And the pro tour is here. And so I after the World Championships, went to the Nationals. I was second in the slalom at the Nationals and announced that I was turning pro at the press conference at the Nationals. And I raced pro the next weekend and got a paycheck. And I was like, yeah, man. And I did that for seven more years. And it was, what I loved about it is you live and die by your own rules, right?
Right.
No one's telling you what to do anymore. You figure out your life. And that's what taught me probably more than anything in that transition into business later. You know, how you structure your life, how you prepare, all those different things in my pro career, how to negotiate your contracts, all those different things I learned in that period of life. And I loved it.
Didn't Spider Savage go from the ski team into the pro as well?
Exactly. He did it right after a World Cup in and he said, screw it, I'm gone. And he raced next week.
Kind of interesting, yeah, are those folks. I mean, like you say, we were around a very interesting time, you know, and that's kind of what encouraged me to write the book, was that, you know, I don't know if you could write that book about every time. I think it's a specific time frame that the folks like your parents that came and the Stein Erickson that came, and he was still around, and everybody was still involved, and to see part of that, that is what really made that town.